the volume.
The Colin Cowherd Podcast brought to you by FanDuel. It's never been easier to play fantasy on FanDuel. Whether you love basketball, golf, soccer, or any fantasy sport, there is a contest for every fan. FanDuel, more ways to win.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Monday Morning Podcast. So a lot to talk about. I want to touch on four things before I get to the Cowboys-Chargers game. A lot to talk about in that game with Matt Mosley, who's been covering the Cowboys for 15-plus years. I want to start with the Steelers. It is week two, and it's understood that veteran quarterbacks over the course of a season get arm fatigue. They get hit a few times. What you're concerned about with an older Brady, you know, Breeze in his last couple of years, Phillip Rivers, is how are they post-Thanksgiving? They're usually pretty fresh early. It is week two, and Big Ben looks like something from the Jurassic era. He has no mobility. He has never been good pre-snap. The Steelers offense, with a rebuilding offensive line, is basically throw it deep to Chase Claypool and cross your fingers. Najee Harris appears to be a really nice player. But this offense, I mean, Big Ben through two games. I mean, he's completed 45 of 75 passes, couple of touchdowns, a pick. This is not a team that can get to the playoffs. As good as that defensive front seven is, they were taken apart by Derek Carr. If you watch that Steelers-Raiders game, Derek Carr was so far superior playing on the road to Big Ben. Accuracy, deep ball, managing the line of scrimmage, and the Steeler operation has coddled Big Ben. So they really haven't, over the last two or three years, aggressively drafted an elite quarterback in the first or second round. Green Bay did. And Aaron Rodgers showed a slight decline. Even Tampa last year, second round, they're going to go get somebody, and Brady won a Super Bowl. The Steelers right now are not close to a Super Bowl team with this offense. And if you watch that game, Derek Carr was so much better than Big Ben. It was embarrassing if you're a Steeler fan. I want to talk about the best young coach in football, and it's not necessarily Sean McVay. It's clear that it's not only an indictment on the New York Jets operation, but what you're seeing with Sam Darnold and the Carolina Panthers is pretty remarkable. The knock on Darnold out of college, they're 2-0 with two comfortable wins, but the knock on Darnold out of college, and I watched every snap, was his accuracy issues. What is he completing now? 70% of his throws. He doesn't make the mistakes. Total composure. It would be easy to just say this is an indictment on the Jets. But instead of just the negative side, let's look realistically at the positive side. Not only has Matt Rhule made Darnold more comfortable, this defense has 21 quarterback hits and 10 sacks in two games. What does that tell you? The culture of the Carolina Panthers is headed in the right direction. It also tells you this is a remarkable stat on Matt Rhule, the coach of Carolina. Going back to the beginning of last year, you will not believe this. Carolina leads the NFL with the fewest three and outs. That's with Teddy Bridgewater and a start with Sam Darnold. Now think about that. Not Mahomes, not Lamar Jackson, not Tom Brady, not Derek Carr, not Matt Ryan, not Russell Wilson, not Aaron Rodgers. No, the fewest three and outs. Matt Rhule, Teddy Bridgewater, and Sam Darnold. But this is a offensive line that outside of right tackle graded poorly, left tackle all the way to right guard. What Matt Rhule is doing with this suboptimal offensive line, the scarce number of three and outs, the revamping, rebooting of Sam Darnold is really mind-blowing. You know, you hire these college coaches and you cross your fingers. You don't really know. But he appears to be I know it's early. You know, I know it's like 18 games. But watching Sam Darnold play, the comfort in which he plays the position now is stark. It is obvious. Third thing I want to talk about. I like Tua out of college. And then before he started, I went on the air and said, I think Tua is going to be a big miss. My belief with quarterbacks is you got to give me some special. Size, mobility, arm, something. Joe Burrow, swag, confidence. So I said before Tua really played, I said, I just don't see it. I think he's going to be a miss. And in the NFL, it's always sort of understood that a GM who drafts a quarterback in the first round does not want to acknowledge, I missed on my quarterback. The Arizona Cardinals GM, Steve Keim, deserves a lot of credit. They went and got Josh Rosen, and the following year, Steve Keim put his ego aside and went and drafted Kyler Murray, acknowledging, I whiffed on our first pick. Well, Kyler Murray has obviously been an MVP-level home run selection. But I said the Dolphins have done a great job, Chris Greer, the GM, and Brian Flores, but I think they missed on their quarterback. And last year was a great quarterback class. And I said, I think they have to acknowledge we kind of whiffed on the quarterback. I mean, Tua was 6-3, but threw for under 200 yards multiple times. Injury history, small. You know, he's an accurate thrower when a play is designed perfectly, but that's like saying your house has a good foundation. That's the minimum you need to have a house. Like, the foundation has to be solid, or you pick the wrong house. Accuracy is important, but it's sort of a given in this league. But the other thing to think about is Bill Polian told me this years ago that when he drafted Peyton Manning, it changed the way he drafted for years after that. He said, we knew with Peyton Manning, we'd be playing with the lead. So we went and drafted pass rushers, knowing that we would have second half leads for most of our games. You also have to draft based on what's in your division. If you're in the Seahawks division and Arizona's division and you face Russell Wilson twice a year and Kyler Murray twice a year, you know, the Rams need to realize we have to draft athletic linebackers and athletic defensive linemen. We have two of the cagiest, most active mobile quarterbacks in the league. When I'm Miami and I look at Josh Allen walk into my place, forget the score, forget the domination. You knew last year before the draft how gifted Josh Allen was. 6'6", huge top 2-3 arm in the league, great mobility. Now think about that. Over the next 10 years, you'll face Josh Allen minimum 20 times. If Tua is your quarterback, you will go into those games 20-for-20 at a decided athletic size and arm disadvantage. I think the Dolphins made a big mistake not drafting another quarterback. To watch Josh Allen pick apart that Miami defense. And nobody blames athletes for getting hurt. Tua got hurt again. But this has been the stigma with Tua. His health. He's a smaller athlete. And we know this. I mean, Big Ben, Cam, Justin Herbert, they can take more hits. He got sacked a couple of times yesterday, got hit in the ribs, Tua is out. So the injury question surfaces again. Miami has done virtually everything right. But in this league, if you get the quarterback wrong, it doesn't matter. I want to talk about this. We always talk about how hard it is to find the right quarterback. But I want to talk about the Titans and the Atlanta Falcons and Arthur Smith, who was the offensive coordinator for Tennessee, took a job with Atlanta. That if I said to you who are the top 7 to 8 coaches in the league, virtually all of them would be veteran coaches. John Harbaugh, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, Sean Payton, Andy Reid. Overwhelmingly older guys. Why? Because you think quarterbacks are a roll of the dice. About 25% of coordinators named head coach hit. Sean McVay hit. Sean McDermott hit. Brian Flores, I believe, hit. Arthur Smith is a fascinating test because clearly Ryan Tannehill is struggling without Arthur as his OC. So the Titans did beat Seattle, but Tannehill had no touchdowns, and Derrick Henry was mostly the entire offense. Regardless of the win, Tannehill does not look the same as he did the previous 2 years with Arthur Smith. But he goes to Atlanta, and this Atlanta team has real offensive weapons. Russell Gage, Mike Davis, the running back, Kyle Pitts, Calvin Ridley, Matt Ryan has been an MVP. Two ugly blowout losses. This organization, Atlanta, looks completely lost. And, you know, it points to something that we know this in our politics. There are just vice presidents who are not presidential. And I look at Arthur Smith, and two people suffered, Atlanta and Tennessee. Right now, Atlanta is in the running with the Jets and the Jags as the worst team I've seen so far. Also wanted to throw this out about Tom Brady. During the offseason, Russell Wilson put his name out there for several teams that he would be willing to go to. And there was this argument or debate, how many first-round picks would Russell Wilson be worth? Well, obviously, if you look at the mayhem in Chicago with Andy Dalton, Justin Fields, Matt Nagy's probably not going to make it through. The GM's going to get fired. Russell Wilson would be worth, despite his loss yesterday, would be worth, to me, five first-round picks. But I find it fascinating watching Tom Brady, how small the market was for Tom Brady. Do you realize Brady, with 14 more touchdown passes, will end up with more touchdowns in his 40s than in his 20s? Now, what does that mean? Is he better than he was in his 20s? No, the game has changed. And it is remarkable that only the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and the LA Chargers, this was pre-Justin Herbert draft, were aggressively pursuing him. Now, those are two of the best GMs in the league, Tom Telesco of the Chargers and Jason Light of the Bucs. But it's pretty remarkable that in an offensive league, when we know the value of the quarterbacks, that only two teams made a run at the greatest quarterback of our lives. And, you know, the thing that's amazing about what quarterbacks do. Now, again, Russell Wilson lost yesterday, but Pete Carroll had been fired twice and had a losing record in Seattle. And if he stays coaching 3 to 4 more years, he will end up in Canton as a Hall of Fame coach because of Russell Wilson. Did anybody talk about Jason Light, the GM of the Buccaneers, before Brady got there? Now we laud him as one of the great talent evaluators in the industry. Bruce Arians, retired, did broadcasting. That didn't work. Goes to Tampa, struggling. And now Bruce Arians, if he wins another, will wear a gold jacket. If you get the quarterback right, everything else just works. Look at how we view Tampa this morning. The GM, the coach. Look at how we view Antonio Brown. It's remarkable. Only two teams aggressively pursued Tom Brady. And again, he's going to end up with more touchdown passes in his 40s than his 20s. I don't think he's as good as he was in his late 20s. But the game has so changed. The rules are so offensive-minded. That from this point forward, when we get into these discussions about what is a quarterback worth, well, forget the ownership position on merchandise sales and television appearances. I mean, that Buccaneers now are a primetime team. They're going to double to triple their merchandise sales if you own it. But there really is no cap on what Tom Brady is worth. I mean, you tell me, what is he worth to the Glazers? What is he worth to Jason Light? What is he worth to Bruce Arians? Is he worth a gold jacket? Russell Wilson's going to get Pete Carroll a gold jacket. Tom Brady is going to get Bruce Arians with another title, a gold jacket. And so anytime we get into these discussions, oh, how much can you give up? How much is this aging quarterback worth? It's like the old commercial, priceless. There is no market for what Brady's worth. There is no market for what Russell Wilson has done to Pete Carroll and John Schneider's legacy. I just watch Brady and I think to myself, retire? To what? A beach? I mean, Tom Brady right now, I watched him against Atlanta. And my takeaway is Brady not only chose the right franchise in terms of weapons. They obviously had, you know, Tom, when he interviewed with Jason Light, came out and said, listen, I know Chris Godwin, you know, I know Mike Evans, you guys do need a right tackle. I mean, he told them what they needed. But it is almost as if, this is why people retire to Florida when they get over 60. Brady looks healthier because he's in that humidity constantly. And I think it's loosened him up physically. I think it's loosened up his personality. I just watch Brady right now and I'm like, I just can't get over it. 32 teams, 30 weren't interested. They look like the best offense in this league, in the NFC. I mean, this morning, who challenges them in the NFC? the Rams, maybe. I think they're several steps ahead of Seattle, San Francisco, Green Bay. Remarkable. Let's get to Matt Mosley.
The NFL is back, and FanDuel Sportsbook wants you to get the most out of every play. That's why they're giving everybody a $10 risk-free bet every week. All you have to do is bet a same-game parlay bet with three legs or more. And if your bet doesn't win, FanDuel pays you back up to $10. Same-game parlay. Look for that. The same-game parlay icon to know what markets are eligible for same-game parlays. FanDuel, easy to use, America's number one sportsbook. No feeling like nailing a same-game parlay bet. New to FanDuel Sportsbook? They're offering a $1,000 bet if you prefer that. Sign up, promo code Colin. First bet loses, get up to $1,000 back in site credit. That's promo code Colin.
21 plus and present in Arizona, Colorado, Indiana, Michigan, Jersey, Tennessee, and Virginia or West Virginia. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund $10. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Same game parlay available for multiple sports in all states on mobile/web. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Visit fanduel.com/RG in Colorado, Jersey, and Virginia. Or call 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. Tennessee Red Line is 1-800-889-9789. Or go to 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXT-STEP to 53342 in Arizona.
All right, let's start, Matt, with the interesting coaching in the end of regulation. I didn't quite understand it. I thought they should have run another play instead of hoping for a 56-yard field goal. What was your takeaway and your kind of thoughts on the coaching at the end? Is that a Kellen Moore thing, a Mike McCarthy thing, where they just let the clock run out? You cross your fingers. It almost felt like they survived the Cowboys coaching.
Yeah, I thought the kicker, Colin, bailed them out. And I think it's a case of, and I've seen this for a few years now, it even predates to McCarthy, but I thought there was some panic that set in. They had enough timeouts. You could tell they sort of wanted to force a running play. What happens to this coach is that if he gets even close, you saw him in a previous game do this. I think it was the first game, in fact, maybe before the half. If they get to where like he possibly could make a kick, they just want to slow it down and are scared of doing anything at that point. So I do think some panic set in. You know, I think it's helpful when you do have a quarterback who can take control of that situation, but you need the coach, the head coach, to be in control of the sideline. For years, we got on to Andy Reid for some of his game management when he was with the Eagles. I think McCarthy does some of the same stuff. And if they miss that field goal and they lose that game, that was going to be an enormous talking point.
I thought, overall, I thought Justin Herbert basically had to overcome a couple of iffy officiating calls, but overcome more than that his teammates, about 13 or 14 penalties. He had a bad red zone pick. But as I watched that game, I thought Dallas sort of dominated the first half. They didn't make a lot of adjustments in the first half. Dallas was gashing them for yards. The penalties were just, I mean, it's so Chargers. It was so insane. Herbert did have a bad pick six, although I think he's a remarkably gifted young talent. You don't probably see him as much as we do here in Los Angeles, but your interpretation of what you saw Justin Herbert do today against the Cowboys defense.
I love this quarterback, and I did last year. I just made it a point to watch him week after week because you could see the development. My wife commented late in the game, Colin, she said, this is a poor man's Brad Pitt. So I don't know. That was one of the comments that came out of our household. But I really think he's just a tremendous quarterback. Now, Aikman did this early in his career. There's something he does that I think he'll grow out of. The pick you're talking about in the red zone, Allen got tripped. This guy's so on time and his throws are so great, he stays on schedule no matter what. And sometimes he doesn't like let play out what's happening in front of him. And he ripped that ball to where he thought Allen was going to be. that was just a weird, and that was some kind of bad luck. Now, I thought the Cowboys, that's a game the Cowboys usually lose, which makes you think, okay, what could be at work? And to your point on what a horrible, like, we're almost to the point, you know, all these quarterbacks got hurt in the first set of games, an early set of games, early window. It's almost kind of like they told the refs, hey, if anybody even gets close to the quarterback, shut down the play.
Yeah.
Like we're sitting there wondering, all of America and the officials and the broadcasters, Romo's like, okay, was that a grounding? Was he out of the box or whatever? And they shut that play down and they call that thing a sack. Now, that was a smart play, what they did to just get some yardage back and settle for the field goal. But that's almost always something that happens to the Cowboys down there, to see those kinds of things happen to an opposing team. I'm talking about holding penalties. I'm talking about some strange, strange penalties. And you're right. There were some things. I mean, think about what the Cowboys overcame to win this game today. Both starting defensive ends out, putting a rookie out there to play a position he is unfamiliar with and line him up at defensive end. I'm talking about down safeties. They were down, you know, defensive ends. This was, and again, who knows once this season plays out, but this seemed like a game for the Cowboys, Colin, that leaves every possibility open for them. And so I guess what I would say is this win was way more important to the Cowboys than it would have been to the Chargers.
Yeah, there are two things that jumped out to me, Matt. Number one, I thought the Cowboys generated a pretty damn good pass rush against now not a terrible offensive line. Herbert made a lot of it look effortless, but Justin was on the move, Matt, almost the entire game without Gregory, without DeMarcus Lawrence. Micah Parsons goes to the left, completely worked the right tackle from the Chargers on an inside rush multiple times. But let's talk about that. This Cowboy team was decimated up front defensively and had injuries in the back end. I thought they generated a really, again, Herbert, if this was Kirk Cousins, you would have really noticed it. If this was Andy Dalton, you would have noticed it. Justin Herbert was on the run on virtually every pass attempt. He was pushed out of his comfort zone on virtually every dropback. I thought Dallas got a great pass rush.
Yeah, it isn't that wild that missing those players, they were able to do it. The one thing it causes defensive coaches to do, first of all, they don't really know some of these young guys. Odigizua, who was in there today, he's a rookie. I mean, some of these guys are getting way more reps. Dorrance Armstrong usually gets 10 to 12 snaps a game. He was in there constantly. To your point, number 92 is who I'm talking about. You remember him dropping back and getting his hands on some of those screen passes. And the Cowboys defense was extremely fast. Now, what did the Parsons having to line up at defensive end do? Well, it caused a former first round pick to get a lot more snaps. He got like 10 snaps last game. Who'd you see a lot? Van Der Esch. He got a sack. He was racing around. There was a guy named Kearse out there, Jaron Kearse. They loved, you know, you heard the broadcast. The instincts were good. He was making a lot of plays. I guess that's what I would say is, from a schematic standpoint, this defense, even with inferior talent today, under Dan Quinn, is so much more sound than what it was last year.
Yeah.
So they could hold up with all that chaos.
Yeah.
And then maybe we overreact to things is what we do. But the first game against the Washington football team, I believe everybody, like, oh my gosh, they didn't get any sacks. They didn't get any pressure. The Chargers must be great on the O-line. No, probably not. Probably not. They're still going to have some issues. Even Slater, who has had some really good moments, you know, they can put some moves on it. I mean, you saw a guy 54 today chase down. It was a big play. It looked like Herbert was going to get on the outside. Kamara is that guy's name. The only way you would ever know him is because Hard Knocks did a deal on his family and all that. We never thought we would see him, but they're so far down in their defense, these guys are getting on the field. But, I think this is – yeah.
They look athletic. the Cowboys look faster, rangier, and more athletic, whether it's schemes or their draft picks. In the two games I've watched Dallas, even as Tom Brady moved up and down the field, I commented this. There were not a lot of Buccaneer receivers that were wide open. They contested many of those throws. They look athletic to me. They did not, at times last year, they looked slow. Forget the schemes. They looked slow. Dallas looks quick. You don't get it. Hey, listen, Keenan Allen, they had one open receiver that was called back. There was a penalty. Shocker, the Chargers had almost 15. But I think Dallas looks much rangier and more athletic than a year ago.
I think you're right. And when you talk about that speed, I think we need to mention Tony Pollard. Running back, going for, I believe, 109 yards today. And while this coaching staff and Mike McCarthy has been maligned about not running Zeke as much, I think you have to give him credit today for saying this other guy's got the hot hand.
Yes.
He's ripping off 7 or 8 per carry, and this is a home run back is what he looks like. I mean, he had like a 30-yard run. I mean, this guy hits the hole in a hurry, and then you can almost use Zeke to kind of bludgeon the defense a little bit.
Yeah.
Let him lean on people and get them tired. But what do you do against a guy like Bosa? I thought what they did that was smart was, we've always heard this, it's an old coaching thing, run at him. When they have some unbelievable pass rusher who's so great, we talk about, he is a great player. But sometimes if you run right at, and they would do that some today.
Yeah.
They were cutting back, going at him, and he seemed a little out of sorts at times when they would do that. But I thought that was a good strategy today. They didn't force Zeke. I mean, they hammered him in there some.
Yeah.
But they said, you know what? These Pollard's a great matchup. They had nobody that could stay up with Pollard's speed.
Yeah.
And I thought that helped. But it was funny, like you said, when you say they dominated the first half, it was really the first quarter. I think I saw that they had like 13 first downs in the first quarter.
Yeah.
And then it just leveled off.
Yeah.
And they didn't do a whole lot the rest of the game.
I do think this when I watch Dallas. This offense, Dak has never been an artistic thrower. Zeke has declined for several years. My concern with the Cowboys would be this. When Zach Martin and Tyron Smith are healthy, this is a very formidable offensive line. Both were featured on TV today. They're very, very good players still. They've taken care of themselves. Tyron's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Zach will probably get on the first vote as well. What I would be concerned about if I was Dallas is old offensive lines. You know, week 13, week 15, week 16. As I'm watching Dallas, my takeaway is they're going to have a chin. They're going to score points. This is a team that doesn't win any other way but shootout mostly. I do worry about their offensive line because I still think Tyron Smith and Zach Martin are their best offensive linemen. Do you trust their other young offensive linemen?
You know, I don't trust their backups. But I can't say, as I look around the league, that I see a lot of, you know, the bottom line is, if these guys are really young and talented and great, they're going to be starting. So I don't think there are a ton of teams. We even saw the great Chiefs fall apart at the biggest moment in the Super Bowl, and they couldn't hold up. So I think any team is susceptible. The best thing for the Cowboys, and of course, this guy had to miss a game for heat exhaustion, you saw the other day. But this Nsekhe is a veteran who can play both tackle spots. And then the guy you saw out today has grown a lot in his second year, Terrence Steele.
Yes.
So I do think,
yes,
I do think they are set up in a better fashion if they were to have some injuries to be okay with it. The one thing I would say that bodes well is that Tyron Smith, if he's going to miss games, generally misses it with back and neck issues. And for whatever reason, via surgery or whatever it is, he seems to be in a much better place, and he looks very dominant right now. So, I'm not saying book him for the next 15 games. I'm just saying I feel a lot more, I feel a lot better about this line than I did last year or even the year before. They could stand up to some injuries.
You know, it's interesting. As I look at the NFC East this morning, I think the Giants' offensive line and Daniel Jones' inconsistency is simply too much to overcome to be a playoff team. I think the Eagles' defensive front is formidable, but Jalen Hurts, I mean, he is highly unproven, but their defense will keep them in games. I think Washington's using clearly a backup quarterback. As I sat through week two, I've now seen Washington twice, the Giants twice, the Eagles twice, and the Cowboys twice. In 2021, it's an offensive league. If I was to, I pick Dallas to be a wild card team and finish 9-8. I think if I was to redo the NFC East, I think I would put Dallas ahead of Washington. I think Washington was pretty fortunate to beat the Giants on Thursday. The one thing I'm seeing from Dallas, I'm seeing explosiveness with Tony Pollard. CeeDee Lamb's a real star. Dak, shoulder is not an issue. Offensive line is healthy. It's an offensive league. I will say Dallas is about what I thought they would be, but I think they are. I think they're a little bit better up front. If I was to redo it, I think I would pick the Cowboys to win the NFC East. Not by many games over Washington, but they're a little better than I thought at 1-1. When I watched them today, I know that Cowboy crowd was probably 70-30 Cowboy fans, but I came away today thinking, listen, we can blame the Chargers for all those mistakes, but good teams force other teams into mistakes, the tempo, the speed, the strength. Dallas is a little better than I thought. Are they, how do you view them from your perception before the first snap and now your perception after the second game?
I do think they wish they could play in that stadium more. I thought they functioned better with those fans. They seem to go on the road and play well. The one thing they have to shore up, they have a problem with their special teams coach. You guys on the West Coast are familiar with John Fossil.
Yeah.
And he is an intriguing, sort of engaging character. He has become a problem with the Cowboys. He is so closely connected to McCarthy that he has full dominion over a lot of things. In fact, maybe Dan Quinn and then Fossil, as far as like who has the biggest say in things. And so they end up doing very curious things, like for no apparent reason before the half, the first half, going in there, trying to block a punt and running into the kicker.
Yeah.
There's always some head scratching silliness with special teams that goes back to last year.
Yes.
And for whatever reason, McCarthy is convinced that this is the best special teams coach ever. It's like they're just little buddies and they just spend a lot of time together. So they need to sort of figure that out. But I would probably right now, even though I'm the first to go after Jerry when I think it's appropriate, from what I've seen, and boy, Hurts, who I really like, I watched him in Oklahoma, I watched him in Alabama, that mess they threw out there today where you just drive after drive and they can't get anything done. And they have their wide receivers need to be guys that have time to do double moves, get open downfield. Rager is not a guy who's going to break tackles. He's just an explosive receiver. I would say, unlike last year, the Cowboys have a chance to win this thing by two or three games. I think they really do. And last year, it was just a joke of a division. I think it could be a joke of a division this year. But I do think the Cowboys are the class of this division. And I know Jerry and everybody associated with him enough to know that they viewed today's win as enormous. This was the biggest win they've had in two or three years. That is the way they're going to come out of this thing thinking, I promise you.
You know, it's interesting. You note that on the special teams coach. I'll give you my theory on that. Is that special teams coaches often get marginalized as the least important coordinator, right? Even a great D-line coach will get more press than a special teams coach, or a great young offensive line coach, because there's very few elite offensive line coaches. So special teams coaches, to stand out, have to take big risks. Gunther Cunningham for years, you know, in the league. John Harbaugh. And that's not to say that I like some risks in special teams. But sometimes to be respected and to go from special teams coach to head coach, you have to be seen as spectacularly creative or wildly effective. Well, how do you do that? Blocked punts, tricks, changing the dynamic of games. And when you bring that up, it is interesting. I know because I live in Los Angeles, USC had a special teams coach, John Baxter. And he had the same spell over Clay Helton. Clay let him do anything. And about once or twice a year, they would pull off a zany special teams home run. Just a crazy, crazy success in special teams. But they took, it was a resume filler. He was constantly taking big swings. And special teams are at their best if they're sound with a 2 to 3 times a year major surprise. It's almost like officials. When you don't talk about them, they're highly effective. When I don't know your special teams coach, he's highly effective. So it's interesting. I saw this at USC where John Baxter had a spell over Clay Helton. And it was almost as if he wanted, as he aged, he was in his 50s, I want to get a head coaching job. Where you're not going to get that with sound special teams coaching. You need to lead the country in block kicks. So I wonder if that's happening, that this special teams coach who was with the Rams, now with the Cowboys, he wants a head coaching job. His dad, Jim Fossil, was a head coach. And how are you going to get it?
Yeah.
Big swings. That's just kind of my theory on what I've seen in my life in football.
I'm glad we went there. I've been wanting to hear about your special teams theories for years, in fact.
Sorry. Okay, finally.
No.
Give me one other game you watched. Because I was saying in my lead into you, I watched Derek Carr outplay Big Ben, and the Steelers have coddled Ben for several years, right? They don't want to draft anybody in the second round or the first round, and that's always an uncomfortable situation. Garoppolo to New England, Jordan Love, when you go out and get the guy. I watched Big Ben. It is week 2. He looks slower than Phillip Rivers. He looks so old. Now, he's never been great pre-snap. He's never been somebody that we laud his accuracy. I watch Big Ben. Pittsburgh is in a bad spot at quarterback. I mean, I that was the thing that jumped out to me today. It's like, wow, he is a shot fighter. Their offense is just throw it up deep to Chase Claypool. And Ben, by the way, sometimes hits that. Was there any other game or moment or player you saw beyond the Cowboys Chargers that stuck out to you today?
You know, I thought Josh Allen needed to reassert himself. And, you know, what we do is we sort of Bill Parcells, I used to cover him when he was with the Cowboys, and he would talk about, we poured the anointing oil. And then we start wondering, did we do that too soon?
Right.
You know, Flacco got the enormous, I think, $56 million signing bonus after that Super Bowl. And we're like, okay, he's automatically great. And I thought it was important for Allen to go out. And there was one particular throw. You'll remember this because you saw it on all the highlights. It just kind of reminded me, you know, and again, it's funny that you mentioned Big Ben because he's a younger version of Big Ben who still can move around and still plenty athletic. And he rolls out to the right. And he did what coaches try to teach young quarterbacks not to do. But because he's got a massive arm, he just ripped it back across the other side of the field.
I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just thought that's a man. You know, that's the guy I remembered for last year.
Yes.
So I it's not like I thought he had lost it, but I thought that was a good day for him. And a reminder that these fringe teams like the Dolphins, who were kind of like, oh, what about the Dolphins? You just can't fall in love with that kind of team. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great throw, by the way. That was the throw of the day. One of the throws of the day was that Josh Allen running right, threw a back across his body and an absolute rope into the end zone. I mean, it was like one of those, about 3 guys in the league, Mahomes, one of them, Aaron, that can make that play. Completely throwing against your body, cross field, and to your point, it's he reasserted himself. All right, Matt Mosley, great 25, 30 minutes in the Cowboys, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Okay, I hope you'll be listening to the Doomsday Podcast later.
It's fantastic.
Thank you. Okay. All my best. Bye.
Volume.